Hello, this is Arnold. You're listening to the Dice Hate Me Network. It's a network of one.
All right, and welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
I'm Get Louder.
I'm Bumpy Shogun.
I'm at Rumblesire.
I'm at Brad Smoley.
And we're a podcast all about anything and everything related to board and card games and more.
So much more.
Now I'd like to announce that we are a proud member of the Dice Hate Me Media Network. It is a network of one. So welcome to episode 132. Or as we like to call it, the one about Origins 2017. Guess you can all guess what that's going to be about.
We're talking about last year's Origins.
The Origin 2007. Oh, are we in the future? Wow.
So yeah, I missed it.
I thought it was like cars when it's like the next year. It's always confusing.
It's the model year on a car. Yeah, it's or like a magazine year. Where you get to June 1 in April.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. I apologize to your listeners. Anyway, so this episode, we're going to fly by the seat of our pants and talk about Origins, what was cool, and our best experiences. We're going to skip the pleasantries and jump right into the meat of the podcast. Bear in mind that we have zero notes, so hold on to your butts.
I sped it up.
This podcast is going to be presented to you in 1.5 seconds. Let's go.
Speed podcast.
Fire machines. And if you haven't noticed, we're all together in one room because we just wrapped up Origins 2017. It is Sunday, June 18th. Mm-hmm. And we have been doing various and sundry things at the convention since Tuesday night. So we're a little bit punchy. We were all drinking. Daryl's already giggling. He's had one beer, so this should be
interesting. Well, I was going to say, we're recording this episode from the Kick Track headquarters.
Oh, yeah.
Which is 19 minutes outside of downtown Columbus in the convention center.
In cloudy Worthington, Ohio?
In cloudy Worthington, Ohio, in the worst laid out industrial park I've ever been in.
It's so you can't find it.
My God, we're all going to die or work. It's a lose-lose.
It was a... let's dig into this instead of just rambling on about things. So, Origins, we got here on Tuesday. I don't have any idea what we did on Tuesday. It was all a blur.
This episode's going to be fantastic.
I'll go first. I went to work because I didn't get
that's
here
right.
Until
that's
Friday.
Right.
You can't talk until Friday.
I know. We're on Tuesday. I'm going to go out and have fun. You guys call me when you get to Friday.
Tuesday, Brad, TC, and I drove in the same car. Yeah. We all fit in Brad's fit. Mm-hmm. And we pitched a few movies. We came up with a new game. We pitched the movie, the Chris movie. We're not going to go into detail about that. But we pitched a game for the car, which is fantastic if you have someone in the back seat with a cell phone and reception that works. And it is the IMDb game.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
You can never publish this, so feel free to take it.
It's part of the game.
But what?
Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, it was Rotten Tomatoes. That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm calling it Running Tomatoes because that's what I thought you said. Pretty much we named out a bad actor. Start with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, and then we went on to Nick Cage.
Yeah, so like I was in the back seat, so I pulled up Rotten Tomatoes and pulled up his Keanu Reeves profile. And I'm like, okay, his best movie was a 93% in 1994, and his worst movie was a 0% in 2013, I think it was. What is the best and worst movie? And then TC and Brad took turns trying to figure out what it was.
Email us in with the correct answer, and you'll get the second show on the Dice Hate Me podcast network.
Yeah. We'll drop your name. No cheating.
No cheating.
Just know there's a secret to that game. For people who have insider knowledge about Rotten Tomatoes, documentaries and kids' movies are the only things that get 100%.
Right, yeah. Right.
So you have to get rid of those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those don't count. They don't count.
Well, unless you're David Spade, then your documentaries are
73%. 47%.
Yeah. It's
like, only David Spade would get that on a documentary. I do remember we showed up about the same time, so we went to Wolf's Ridge, which is a place we'd never been. We've talked on the podcast about Barley's and the Three-Legged Mare and places like that. We normally have gone into Origins in the past, but we discovered a new location, Wolf's Ridge Microbrewery or Brewery. I don't know if they want to call it.
Yeah, we got to go on the brewery floor, like with all the tables and everything. Mm-hmm. So they had a nice like table set up
so
and everything.
It's a tap house, really?
Yeah, it's like a brewery.
Brewster-on?
Is
that a term?
They're called brew pubs.
Yeah.
They are brew pubs.
No, this menu was a bit more than pub food.
Gastro.
I mean, it was. Yeah,
gastro brew pub.
Yeah, gastro brew pub.
Gastro brew.
And that's great, it, everybody.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time with more great content.
Did you guys play any games on Tuesday?
Did we play any games
on Tuesday? Yeah, we went to Three Legged Mare, right?
We went to West Ridge and then came back and we played Fate of the Elder. We played
Ben Rossett's prototype, brewing.
That's right.
Because we're gonna go see Wonder Woman.
We went to Three Legged Mare afterwards. Oh, we spent a lot of time in
the mare
pubs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the mare.
Yeah.
So now we know why they don't know what they did.
Damn it, they're on to us.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we got a chance to play a 6-player game of Homebrewers, which is designed by Ben Rossett and Matthew O'Malley as a follow up to Brewcrafters and Brewcrafters Travel Card Game, and we wanted to see some of the new iterations, some new testings. I wanted to be able to play it so that I could then subsequently teach it in the Unpub area later in the week.
Yeah.
We decided through the thing that it was a lot of fun. We made some suggestions, but we also agreed that it probably was not a 6-player game. So we're probably going to make it a 2-5 player game. We've actually have a 2-player variant that we think will work pretty well. So,
which isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all.
So let me get this right. So we have the Heavy Euro Brewcrafters.
Yes.
We have Brewcrafters, the travel card game.
I know where this is going, but
we've got Homebrewers, the dice game.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Please, my God, tell me that there is going to be either a Brewcrafters dexterity game. Or a Brewcrafters a legacy game, which is literally just a 6-pack of beer.
I think I can get started on the Brewcrafters dexterity game, but first, hold my beer.
Should be a 6-pack of beer. Nice. Yeah. Wants to really be a legacy game.
Brad, this is a family podcast.
Can I be back on the podcast?
Whoa.
Hey. You all right?
Okay.
Take a minute. Okay, so we're back. We had to cut out because we almost had a death on it.
Network of Done.
So Brad told a really bad joke.
It was phenomenal. It was a great joke.
And Eric almost died. Eric fell out of his chair, and there's a window sill next to him.
And a fan.
And it was all off. The fan was off.
Yes. But then all of a sudden he was just out and he
blacked out for like 5 seconds.
Exactly. So what's the last thing you remember?
I remember Daryl losing some of his beer at Brad's bad joke.
Okay. Where were we?
How responsible are we? Eric almost died.
Let's keep recording.
The show must go on.
More games.
Yes. Okay.
Seriously, do you need water or anything? So another beer?
Quick reminder, everybody. If you're laughing, remember to breathe.
Oh my God. It's
too soon. It's too soon.
Yeah, Eric. Jeez.
It's a family podcast.
Oh, okay.
That's what got us in this problem in the first place.
Yes, exactly right.
A family of one.
I'm slowly killing everybody off.
But you are.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay, anyway. So we got to play Homebrewers and so on and so forth. Let's move on. What?
What?
That's where we were.
That's
to be it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. On to the next one.
Let's go on to the next day or whatever.
It was a good game.
It was fun.
Yes, it was.
Okay. After Homebrews, do we call it a night, or is that when the three of us played Fate, Brad, you and I? That was that night.
I think that was the next night.
Yeah, that was
the
next
night.
It's been a week.
It's been a week. Yeah.
So we all headed back to our respective hotels at that point.
Yeah, it was getting pretty late.
Yeah.
And I went.
Oh, we closed the mayor down. It was about 12:30 by the time.
Yeah,
Gerald and I went back to our hotel.
Oh, God.
That's it. I'm not saying anything else. It's a family podcast.
Yeah. Wednesday, normally what happens is we have booths set up for Dice Hate Me Games or Greater Than Games booth. This year, on the last podcast, if you listened to the last podcast, you might have heard that we didn't have a booth. Well, surprise! We had a booth.
The marketing plan all along was tell everyone we don't have a booth.
Right. So
swoop in when one opens up.
Right. So, when we recorded the podcast last, we didn't have a booth. And then about 5 days after we recorded the podcast, all of a sudden I found out that Mara, our marketing specialist, had called up. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, there was space at Origins.
Yep.
And we had a last-minute booth. I had already made plans to do playtesting in the Unpub area and so on and so forth. But I wanted to help them set up on Wednesday. So I went, did some setup while you all took care of the Unpub area. Now, the Unpub area was official this year.
Yeah, no, let's not call it an area. Let's call it the room.
The room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I want the booth to make sure that it's definitely smaller.
Oh, hi, Mark.
So we had a room.
Yes.
It was 28 rooms,
tables.
Really?
Yeah, it was 28 tables of Unpub. Yes. So we
there was
ran
a bit
that,
of confusion, but
a
we,
lot of confusion.
We handled
a bit is yep. an understatement. But yeah.
It was growing pains for the parties involved.
Sure.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, we're not new to cons, so mm-hmm. we made the best that we could out of it, and it ended up turning into a really good thing
yeah.
at the end. So,
and Unpub will be officially back next year too.
We will officially be back next year. We will be in the A block next year, as opposed to Exile. But huge props to Brad and John and Eric and everyone that helped iron out all the kinks and the wrinkles.
And thanks to Renegade Games for sponsoring the room and taking care of everything. So
yep. Yeah. Renegade, some classy folk right there.
So that was nice to be able to have two places we could kind of hang our hats. We had the booth proper that we normally have, and it was just a little different than we normally have. And we had the new Unpub room, which was nice. And Wednesday was interesting, too, for the Unpub area. For all of you, you said a little bit of confusion. Well, for everybody out there knowing, it used to be the First Look. Yep. And they would have on Origins Wednesday, the exhibitor hall is not open, but the main gaming hall opens for people who are early showing up, can come in and play. The First Look room was open in previous years on Wednesday. That was a little bit of a surprise. People coming in, not necessarily a lot of people, but people popping in and while you're trying to set up, wondering where the First Look tables are and things like that. But as Daryl mentioned, we worked past it. Everything's all good. So we did set up. Booth setup didn't really take all that long. I kind of just stood around. We have all kinds of great volunteers, or citizens rather, that come to help set up.
There's a ton of citizens.
A ton of citizens.
No one knows me at all. And it's kind of wonderful. Yeah. It's kind of cute.
It is kind of cute. Yeah. Even if you're wearing a Dice Hate Me shirt, doesn't really matter.
Yep.
I mean, I'm standing there in a Dice Hate Me shirt. They don't even know me.
Yeah, they don't know.
No, they have no idea.
The only part that bugged me is like, if I came up waiting to talk to Mara or Chris, they were like, "Oh, can we demo this game?" I'm like, "No." No.
You see that name? That's please. My name.
Yeah, I'm like
designer byline.
That's mine. That's mine. That's no.
No, it's just one of those things where a lot of the volunteers or the citizens have been involved with Greater Than Games for a while, so they're mostly involved with Sentinels and things like that.
Yeah.
But there are quite a few that do show up later in the week and so on that are very familiar with Dice Hate Me Games products and are willing to teach like brewcrafters and talk about Viva Javas and things like that at length. So we appreciate them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a great mix at Gen Con, so I'm looking forward to that. But beyond the booth and so yeah, everything else, I wanted to scout what was going on around the exhibit halls because, as usual, I wanted to make a list of things that I needed to buy because I knew TC was not going to buy any of them.
Yeah, I just needed to give you ideas,
yeah,
which I failed miserably at doing. But
well, you did.
Yeah.
What did I not get for you this year?
Oh, well, I mean, Capstone Games' entire booth, you could have just picked up.
Yeah, but the Climbers isn't available yet, is it?
Well, no, I have Climbers.
Yeah.
No, I want a Hospital.
If you want out, you never mentioned Hospitalek.
I just go there and buy them things. Buy them.
So TC's solution to everything is just buy everything in the booth and figure it out later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially with a company like that.
Here's
they're all
the thing.
Heroes.
With TC, when he recommends a game, it's like thin ice. It's going to be either really good, or it's like walking on a lake, frozen lake rather. You don't know if it's going to be thin ice or solid. Like, case in point, TC also recommended Arabian Nights at one point.
I just said buy this. I just said buy this for me. Let's buy this. And we did, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
I remember every single time playing Tales of Arabian Nights and having a great time.
So, in addition,
So we're going to move on. I'm not going into the Tales of the Raven Knights. In addition to what our normal haunts were with Three-Legged Mare, and before we mentioned Barley's, we found a new place. Bear Burger. And it's because nobody knows to go there. So
they look at it first. Like, oh, it's like a hipster joint. I'm not going there.
Right.
Yeah, B-A-R-E Burger.
Bear Burger, that's right.
Because everything's organic and... Hipstery.
Yeah. There are lots of vegan and vegetarian options.
I had a quinoa burger.
Yeah, there's no like straight burgers. There's no straight burgers on the menu. Like, there's no like, look, it's a burger with lettuce, pickles, and onions. Like, everything has a spin on it.
I don't know. I thought the place felt pretty inclusive.
No.
Pride week, Chris.
And so, all the food we've had there has been amazing. Like the falafel cups, I've had Brussels sprouts twice there. I love Brussels sprouts.
Yep, I had my super vegan burger, and I was super happy.
Yes, you were. Wednesday night, I guess, I'm not sure. We went with the Bear Burger, and then we kind of puttered around, but we ended up playing...
Wednesday night, you said you played Fate of the Elder Gods when we thought it was Tuesday night.
Is
that true?
I believe so.
Yeah, we went back to the Crown, because that's where the game was. What did we do for dinner? Because it was after dinner.
Man, this is fascinating podcasting.
All right, anyway, so Wednesday night at some point... So Brad, Chris, and I end up back at the plaza, the Grand Plaza, and we and Chris brought out the
advanced copy of
Fate of the Elder Gods, which is the first time I have seen it since prototype form.
Yep.
All the NPCs and or the PPCs and the NPCs have gone to Chris, and I haven't seen Chris, so it's just kind of been like, okay, I'm trusting you. Don't let me down, buddy. And so he pulled it out. So he brought the game down, and the three of us played it. And I know I'm biased, and everyone's going to say Daryl's biased, but the production on the game is unbelievable.
Daryl's biased.
It's so good. And, I mean, well, the game is amazing, too. But it's just gorgeously done. Gorgeously done. It's so good. Panda did a great job.
Have another beer, Daryl. Yeah, but we had a good time. Did you enjoy it, Brad?
I did. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but it took me about half the game to really figure out how to move through the game and stuff. And obviously, you two have played it before.
A few times.
Playing with kid gloves.
And
the most important thing is that Daryl won the game for the first time.
First time ever.
Yeah, because five solo.
Did you win by not losing, or did you win by winning?
I won by
not losing.
By not losing.
Right. Because five triggers.
Because he destroyed Chris.
Five curses triggered one in a row.
It comboed. Like, this one, and then this one, and then this one.
And I filled up with the elder.
Well, actually, I destroyed Chris by cursing him 452 times in a row.
Yeah. That was fun. No, it was a good time. Fate of the Elder Gods came out quite a bit over the week, which I'm very happy about. And everyone seemed to have a really good time.
High demand. But look, I'm not going to drone on and on. I'm not going to make it a commercial and tell them that's going to be available at Gen Con for purchase, and that's going to come up to the backers at the end of the month. That's I'm not going to do any of that stuff.
That's good. Or how people can probably pre-order it on the Greatland Games site, right?
Yeah, that's too commercial.
GreatlandGames.com has got pre-orders, and that's we won't mention that. No. Or how they would get the Kickstarter promos if they pre-order it before Gen Con.
Yeah, that's absurd.
That would be gross. Moving on.
So what happened on Thursday?
Thursday, I did the annual mini running of the bulls. So, Origins does not have that many.
It's like puppies.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It's like the mosey of the bulls. It's not really.
Brad and I were in there.
The waddle of the bulls.
Yeah. Brad and I were in there, and the doors open. We're just like, okay.
Origins is interesting because they have an ebb and flow as to when they have new releases. A lot of people save their releases for Gen Con, so it's. This year was not too bad. I mean, they had Licentious Spice Road that was getting a big push, and an actual release at the convention. There were other releases that were out there, but Licentious Spice Road was pretty much the number one on everybody's list.
Yeah,
and so I of course have an exhibitor badge. I make my rounds and try to get in line. What is interesting about Origins though, versus different of a Gen Con, and it's actually kind of different or weird, is that you can go around and they actually devote that hour beforehand to press to come in and talk and get, you know, advance, you know, the interviews or talk in the booth and so on and so forth. Same thing at Gen Con, but almost none of the vendors sell in that hour. They save it until 10.
So at Origins, you know, it's kind of like bad form to sell before 10 o'clock before the doors officially open and everybody comes in. So if you do want to get ahead on something, I mean, every now and then you'll find something where they'll sell it like 15 minutes before or something like that. I was able to get a copy of Sensor Spice Road slightly before the doors opened, and then I was waiting in line to get Lisboa when the doors opened. And so, but at that point, it's not, like I said, it's more like the mosey of the bulls and not necessarily as quite as crazy as Gen Con. So you're able to go and pick and choose. Didn't you pick up that game way before the doors opened?
Yeah, I just wandered over and asked to get a copy.
It was like 10 after 9.
I didn't say what game.
I mean, no. It was like 9. Everybody had 9. No, it was 9 after 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was an honor.
It's not, Brad. There was a line, and they were just, yep. It's not necessarily honor code. It's just most of them are not set up to sell, and then they wait. But anyway.
Could we say that it's more civil than Gen Con and leave it at that?
I'll leave it at that. Yeah. And it's also more freeform than Gen Con is. Most booths at Gen Con are ready to sell. But I will say, it's probably because Gen Con does sell the VIG badges.
Yeah, the like $600 VIG badges.
Right, so people can get in an hour before and actually purchase stuff before the general public can. So that's different than Origins.
Okay, honestly, at $600 for a VIG badge, it should just come with the damn games that you're going to get money
for. Yeah, you just list the ones you want, and then they're waiting
for show up in your hotel room.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, some valet shows up.
Your games.
That is an absurd amount of money.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but if people are willing to pay it, then it stays at that place.
I just look at it as at $600 we're talking about spend free market anything again. Else.
Free that's true. Market now doesn't work. Gen Con.
The invisible politics. Let's have politics.
Let's talk about politics now.
So Trump tweeted.
So Thursday the hall.
He's talking about
Thursday the hall.
It's weird.
I will talk about my haul that I got first, and I picked up a few things here and there between it. But my main haul was I got Honshu, which has been in my Instagram and Twitter feed for 6 months now. Ever since BGGCon, people talk about Honshu constantly. So I was like, I'm going to get this game. So I got Honshu. I got King Domino because it's up for a spiel. And everybody says it's really good. But then the people compare and say, like, King Domino is, like, simple Honshu. And Honshu is, like, advanced to King Domino. I don't know. I haven't played my copy of King Domino yet. Sensor Spice Road, of course, because everybody and their brother got it. I picked up Train Heist. I don't know that I knew what I was buying, but it had trains.
Sounds like a winner.
No, it had the word heist in it. Chris was like, yes.
I was like, ooh, I want that.
Surprising this longtime listener.
Yeah, exactly. Sentient, which I actually had missed the boat on that one, but it looked cool. It was in the Renegade Games booth, and it was by Jayox Cavern, which we love his designs.
Yeah.
And it looked like on the back of the school, it had like an assembly line type of thing with robots, and the art was awesome looking. So I was like, you know, I'll take a chance on that. So I picked it up. Master of Orion, which I was super excited about before the con. Got the second to last copy of that one even available. And it was sold out like 15 minutes.
Oh, really? Wow.
It was fast. And finally, Lisboa. I was the second person to at the con to buy Lisboa. And when I told DC I got Lisboa, he's like, what?
But only what because, you know.
Well.
It's you know, free market.
It was a free market.
But I got the inside scoop on that. Like, so they had copies of Lisboa, like, airlifted in.
Right.
So they have some in for Origins. But so they didn't really make any money off of them, really, behind the scenes. But, like, the retail price for that is like $130, right?
So, yes. Whew. When I was in line, I did not realize it was $130. I had no idea what the ticket price was. All I know is that Dan, who better be listening to this, Dan Patrice from the Geek All Stars said, "Hey, Chris, we should get a copy of Lisboa if you're going to be there, because then we can do a video for it, and it'll be all cool, and it'll be awesome." And I'm like, okay, I'll look into that. And so I mosey over, and I look at Lisboa, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Vital Acerta, and oh, he's going to be here. So that's cool. And then I'm waiting. I'm talking to Alex Sood, who's now the president of Eagle and Griffin Games. And so I'm sitting there, and we're talking, and all of a sudden we get ready to buy. And I said, all right, well, hook me up. I'll get a copy of Lisboa. And he brings it over, and I said, well, how much is it? And he goes, $130. And I went, I mean, it's just a sound like, oh, it was the Kickstarter Deluxe Edition. And I'm like, how much for one rib? You know, it's like... So I was already pocket committed at that point, so I went ahead and bought it. And I'm like, yeah, it's the deluxe version, and we'll see how it goes. So anyway, people were a little upset because they were selling copies of it there. But the predominant amount of the copies that they brought were picked up by Kickstarter backers.
Yeah.
So there were only like 30 or maybe 40 copies that were bought by people there, which, you know, out of the percentage of people waiting for Lisboa is not bad.
Yeah, but it still falls into the gray area of, do you sell it at a con if no, all your backers have not received it?
I know. I get so, it. But it's always
like, if you let people know, a lot of people are pretty understanding. But you know, it's up to you. It's up to you if you want to let people
it's
know.
It's a tough choice, and especially with business. But I did hear, there was one caveat mentioned that Vital, who, I think this was his first U.S. convention.
Yeah, he came in, and that's why they brought
That's why they brought it.
Because they were like, we have him here. Yeah. We can't just, like, not have his
game. Exactly. And I think that he mentioned, he's like, I'd like to have my game for sale there, and then that does grease those skids. I mean, if Vital Lacerda is going to make an appearance in your booth and sign games and talk to people.
I shook his hand.
Did you?
Yeah.
Are you going to wash that hand ever?
He was like, oh, hello. And then he turned away. It was my origins moment.
It's a cool story, bro.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
at the Hall of Justice.
At the Hall of Justice. What were you guys doing?
Thursday? Running on pubs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, running
on pubs. Eric was working.
I was still at work.
Still at work.
Eric is a busy bee.
So busy. Yes, he was. I will say that the booth was hopping on Thursday. Thursday was my roaming day. I'd signed up, or there at least Daryl had claimed a table in his name for me for Friday and Saturday to test things.
Because you're not responsible enough to sign up yourself.
No. I like having other people do it for me. So anyway, it was my roam day. I was meeting with people, checking in with the booth, and also with various other people that I know at the convention. And the booth was doing really well. Laser Riders, we set up a whole Laser Riders alley with two copies of Laser Riders out on the table. That thing sold itself. We had a lot of pre-orders at the convention that way. We had the second editions of Viva Jabba's available in the booth, which was awesome.
Yep.
And some copies of Bottom of the Ninth and Brewcrafters. It was a small thing. Again, surprise booth. You know, so...
Yeah, it was pretty much a promotional booth.
Yeah,
right?
It's like, pretty much what it was.
Like, everything was most of the stuff that demoing wasn't for sale. So it was
it was all pre-order stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Get this at Gen Con.
Well, and it was exactly.
It was back in the weeds of the Unpub corner, or the Unpub, geez, the Origins corner.
Yeah, Origins Awards.
So it was.
We still don't know where all that space came from.
So are you responsible now for stacking all the awards?
Yes.
So every award that won is you guys. Specifically no, sent people over.
If I had specifically sent them over, the awards would not have fallen the way that they did. Let's just put it that way. Nothing that I voted for won except the Warhammer 40K Kill Team.
Oh, I'm so surprised.
Yeah, exactly. Surprise! Oh, yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, that was all kind of the ebb and flow of Thursday for me, as far as I know. After we kind of closed things up that night, where did we end up at after that?
God. Well, I know what you guys.
That was BD's nights for the.
I don't know where I ended up. Oh, you ended up back in the room.
Yeah, I ended up back in the hotel room.
Yeah, that was the night we got shawarma. No, not shawarma.
No,
it was Mediterranean.
Yeah,
it was a gyro.
Yeah,
we go back to Wednesday. That was the night we went back to the mayor, and it was trivia night.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Yes.
Oh, no. Wednesday night.
Trivia
night.
Then we did.
Oh,
we
got to
go back.
Yes. Wednesday night was trivia night.
Can we go back to Wednesday night for a second? Night.
Sure.
No, we went to the three-legged mare, right. And all of a sudden we walk in, and there's, like, trivia going. And the guy up on the trivia stage is like, oh, you guys are here for trivia.
We are now.
Yeah. So we get this thing like in the roped off area. We're in the back, like VIP.
And you guys were all there before I got there.
Yeah.
So I walk in and I don't see where you're all at. I thought you might be in the back. And I step in the middle of the room and he goes, "Hey, look, another person for trivia!" Like, called me out. And I like froze because I didn't see anybody else. And I was like, I started walking slowly backwards. He goes, "No, they're around the corner. Come on in." You know, so. Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. So, long story short,
it's based on movement.
Long story short, we split into two teams. Chris botched a newspaper question.
Oh god!
Yes.
And team won.
Our team got more newspaper questions. For the win.
You also, in fairness, got all of the Real Housewives questions right.
Which was, we had a strategy.
You lost.
Yeah. We had a real strategy, and that was. pick all New York for all the answers. Yeah. And then we'll at least get some of them right, right? And we were right, though. There were more New Yorks on that list than the other ones. Yeah.
The host was so happy we were there, though, because we were lively and we seemed to enjoy being there. And the other team seemed to just be kind of...
Although we couldn't really hear them.
Like dealing with it. Wednesday. Yeah.
We were just we were ribbing him.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
more than he was ribbing us.
Yeah.
We were probably a little rude, but...
I think he enjoyed it. It was fun. Yeah.
So was this trivia provided by a particular trivia provider? I know there's a couple around the country.
Just some local guy. Yeah, trivia provided.
Okay, so it wasn't trivia.
It was provided by the Dice Hate Media Network.
Yes.
No, but what was funny was that, like, the first round of questions were all geek-related.
They were all geek-related. Yes.
Like, they were, like, and the answers were, like...
Star Wars, Harry Potter, Star Trek.
Yeah, it was like, this
Game of Thrones.
Name the film, or this franchise, had Agent Smith making clones of himself and laughing maniacally.
Yeah.
And or it was all evil
this
movies.
Epic space franchise
actors.
Saw Han, Luke, and Leia fight a series of Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, pretty much what it was.
And then second round, it's like, okay, so first round, we get every single question.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like, no, not even thinking about it, right? Like, we're just laughing at how bad they are. And then we get the second one, it was like, the worst troll ever.
Yeah, it's like, name all of the housewives.
Yeah,
which shows.
Match them up to Atlanta, Orange County, and New York City.
Yeah,
or
Real Housewives.
Real
like,
Housewives.
Match them up to the right city.
And then we were like,
what?
I hope it doesn't get harder from here, because we're boned.
And that was hilarious, because it was just like...
And that was Wednesday night.
Stuff.
Thursday.
Yeah, so Thursday I got a headache really badly.
Yes.
I could barely buy a gyro.
Yeah.
At the Mediterranean place. I got a migraine, but it was it must have been a migraine because I was out for a long time.
Yeah, you were.
Before then though, it was like building up until this I had a pitch meeting that afternoon with a publisher. I guess we'll just keep it like that. All right.
Yeah.
So I have a pitch with a publisher, and they blocked out an afternoon for me, and I thought it was awesome. They just done everything for me. And by the time I was done with that, though, like, I just didn't drink. I was in the moment, right? I didn't eat. I didn't drink. And when I got out of it, I had a huge headache. I'm like,
well, it's stress. Your blood pressure was up during it because it's still stressful.
Yeah, it's stressful. So I walk out, and like, I'm starting like just. Each step gets worse as I go. And then
catching up.
I'm like, Chris, like, I'm seeing if anyone's going to get dinner, right? Like, but hoping that no one is. And then...
And I ended up down
I'm like
the food
leaning
court
against
where
the
you
wall
are,
as Chris gets to me in the food court. But I just went to bed. But if I want to skip ahead just a little bit, they... both Chris and Josh have ended up getting there that day. So Chris and Josh showed up at the hotel room sometime a little after midnight. And they visited me in my hospital room. And I peeled the covers off.
He goes, you guys aren't leaving, are you? And then we go, no, we're not going anywhere. Yeah, and then he's like, thanks for visiting me in the hospital.
And we played Dairyman.
Dairyman.
Yeah, so we had a fun Dairyman on the bed session.
Yeah, we did.
For clarifying purposes, Dairyman.
Somebody grab Eric.
I'm the only one not laughing.
This is natural. I don't understand. He understands.
A light game from TMG.
Yeah, very light game, but it has a deceptive depth to it.
I don't know, I thought it was fun to play.
Yeah, it was really fun.
It was cool. It's fast, too, and you just, like, you're just rolling dice and trying to make the number 10. I don't know why 10 is related to...
I don't know why 10, yeah. It's
Dairy? Is that, like... I don't know, maybe in Japan, like,
maybe
10
teeth
is, like,
on the cow?
Is 10, like, grade A or something. Grade 10.
10, it's 1%? I don't know.
I don't know. Scott Morris told me an interesting Bruno Cathala story that I can share later about a number. So if you want to hear why people choose numbers.
Well, we had the security guard that was the...
Oh, my God. The security guard was Bruno Cathala undercover.
Yeah.
He totally was.
Yeah. I wanted to get...
So wait.
You had
an experience with a security guard?
No, I wanted to. Because the guy was standing there, and I'm like, he looks just like Bruno Cathala. I swear this Bruno Cathala just, like,
yeah, he looked
undercover.
Really, really, really close.
Yeah, so he's not bothered.
Anyway.
So you didn't have security called on you?
No. We were just looking at security guards. So Thursday, I just wanted to mention really quickly that I went to the Punchboard Media, launch party? I guess that's what they called it. Mm-hmm. And checked some things out, and I got to play some games with media mavens of the Punchboard Media family and also other general people. Anyway, really quickly, one of the things that I played was at the CGE booth, the Czech Games Edition booth. So we played That's a Question.
What the hell is that?
Is that a statement? Yes, it's a statement.
That's a question.
That's a question. So what's interesting about That's a Question is that the cover art has a giant squirrel holding two balls. One is red and one is blue. And so basically it's Would You Rather, but Vlada's version of Would You Rather. With not necessarily bidding, but guessing and... moving up a path and grabbing each other's nuts.
Okay, yeah. Which honestly, like, that is exactly the description, right? And is as highbrow as that
can get
as the game it gets,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. Okay.
All right. So, was it Vlada or Bruno that's doing the Kama Sutra game that's coming out?
That's a different Bruno. That's Bruno Fiduti.
Fiduti. Yeah, okay. But still, it's still a Bruno, like.
It's
two Brunos. It is a Bruno.
Yes, there are two Brunos.
But is there a thing in Europe that's very popular about taking, like, college drinking party games and then turning them to legit paper product? Is that the thing that's going on? Because it sounds like that's a question is.
I don't know.
That's a question is more of a fan.
Because if so, I've got more than my college days.
That's a question really is a game that can be played one of two ways. You can play it, I guess you can play it as a family game, or you can play it as an icebreaker, like for a group of new gamers or trying to introduce people to a group. And it's just very unassuming. Or you can play it with a bunch of people that you know and you're being stupid and you're talking about grinding each other's nuts and stuff. So it's like... You know, it's right there for either way.
I don't know. He's done Codenames, and he did Pictomania, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And I'm like, this is not this high point in the party game.
No, it's not, but it's...
Genre.
It's not. And so I'm wondering, though, if there's, like, it translates differently for, like...
Yeah, like, an
Eastern European audience than it does translate for an American audience.
It's accidentally the squirrel and the whole thing turned into suggestive things whenever... Yeah. They're like, oh, well, what are you talking about?
It's just a squirrel.
That never accidentally happens.
It's just a squirrel trying to get a nut. I mean, I don't know what the problem is.
Why did I take the blue nut?
did they all just... teach it to you, like, straight-faced, like, as if it was nothing, like, wrong with it?
Oh, we all played... a couple of people who were in the group had played it before. So, we just kind of played through it. It was kind of funny, but anyway...
Why are they laughing, they say, in their accents?
Well, yeah. I don't know. No, we're not going to do accents on this, except for Arnold. That's it.
What are you talking about?
But the problem that I have, though, is that I don't have a problem with the entire game. It's just the cover, which I showed TC. So the cover...
I don't think this is a problem. I think this is a...
No, it's awesome. It's awesome, but at the same time. So let's see if I can zoom in enough so you guys can see. So actually, we're going to get the reactions everyone around the table. So, Daryl, there's the
Chris
giant squirrel.
Showing Daryl.
It seriously looks like it's like the Matrix, like red, blue,
red and blue balls in the hands. You see
I expected them to be larger balls.
Okay, so I'm going to show.
As did I.
Now, if you want to play along on the podcast, please go to dicehateme.com and look for the notes, and I will include a picture of the cover of That's a Question, and we'll show you close up what I'm about to show. So, in the background, in this completely innocuous Matrix ripoff of a squirrel standing on a hill, in the very background are two snowmen, and you think, oh, nice, snowmen, oh, that's nice, you're up on top of a mountain, but one snowman's committing murder. Daryl?
Oh my god!
See? Okay, so...
What?
See?
Why is he doing that?
That's like a Calvin and Hobbes ripoff.
Somebody hold Eric.
Yeah, hold Eric. Just make sure.
So, no, seriously, one snowman, to describe what's happening in this scene, is very tiny behind it. It's very, very, very faint, but it's right over the
red ball.
Shoulder.
The red ball.
Over the red ball. There's a snowman pushing another snowman over a cliff. Like, right to the edge of a cliff, and he's going to die. So, yeah.
And the other this snowman, is Sparta style.
And the other snowman clearly has an O face. He's like, oh, no, Mr. Bill. So, anyway.
Oh, this is fun. Yeah. Right. I wish they put me on the cover of a board game. Bye-bye.
Grace him.
Anyway. So after that, we
it's
all played.
It's hot in here, man.
It is pretty hot. Afterwards, we played Codenames Duet. And this is the new thing that's coming out from CGE, which is a follow-up to Codenames and Codenames After Dark and Codenames Pictures or whatever. I think it's Codenames
Deep
Pictures,
Undercover.
Right? Well, Deep Undercover.
Deep
right,
Undercover.
Codenames Duet is a cooperative version of Codenames where you can play it with two people, partners against each other. You can also play it as a team game, which we did. And so we had one team with the other team on each side. The difference in Codenames that's interesting is that you are sharing and trying to guess 15 different agents before your time runs out. You have 9 turns to do that. So you're trying to describe things to the other side. They're trying to describe to you. And you have 6 clues. They have 6 clues. And we have 9 clues. They have 9 clues. And I think 3 of them overlap or something like that. I can't remember. I'll have to look at that. There are 3 X's on each side, though. One of the X's is a bystander. One is the actual assassin, and one is a shared square that you have to guess. So the other team could be trying to describe something to you, and you're like, well, that's an X. I don't know if I want to guess that. Or you're trying to give them a clue what is the X. It could be the assassin. So it's got that twist in the middle of it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's fun. It's an interesting concept of Codenames for people that are a group that want to try you cooperative, or if you have a couple. It plays, Codenames does not, I mean, you can play it with 2 players, but it doesn't really translate as well as when you play with a big group for regular Codenames. Mm-hmm. This is a very interesting version of it that you can play with a couple, as couples. So anyway.
So, as the 4th game in the Codenames series,
yes.
And Disney Codenames and Marvel Codenames have been announced, unless I'm missing anything, we're knee-deep in Codenames.
Yeah.
What's next,
next one is going to be Codenames. You have to figure out which version of Codenames
you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, in other words, think the brand is
they're getting
saturated?
No. Codenames
in the pale ale.
They're pulling the Carcassonne and milking this. No, they're pulling the Flux.
Codenames
and milking this for all that it's worth. Because people keep buying it, just like Flux. So why stop? Well, let's throw more themes on that people like. Sell more copies.
I just want more cards for my base.
It's game. Letting them push out games where squirrels and balls. Cards. So, Codenames is giving them the monetary flow to push out games with squirrels and balls.
And murderous snowmen.
You just showed me a damn cover of squirrels and balls.
Don't pretend like he's making this up.
All right. Anyway, afterwards, after all that, we ended up back in the Unpub area before we went to rescue TC from his death in the room. But I played 2 games before we headed back, and one was Honshu, which everyone's in here has played, right?
Nope.
Eric and TC have not.
Okay. All right, we're going to pause.
We'll be back.
That was a great game of Honshu.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
I really enjoyed it.
Honshu, I had bought it. We opened up the copy, we tried it out, and I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It has spatial puzzling in it, and normally it's not my forte, but in this instance, for whatever reason, I just really got it. And I won that one, and I played it again, and the second time I played it, I won it too, because I'm like, no, I'm just saying.
So you bought it and you won, so you like it 60%
extra? It's 60% better. All right, exactly.
I played the second time with Chris. I didn't play the first time. And I will say, it's a solid 2 on the Pertel scale.
It is, yeah.
After I got through the first one, I was like, I think I get most of this. And I played... The graphic designer in me kicked in, so I was like super tight, super compact. Mm-hmm. It was like I was building an Apple product, make it smaller, make it more efficient.
Yeah.
And it was efficient for what I built, but it was not efficient to win the game.
Exactly.
So that was my downfall.
And I didn't care. I was just maximizing all points.
Yeah, you built Atari ET. We just so
yeah, I did.
Yeah, right.
But I'm kind of encroaching on Brad's territory. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it. I think it was definitely worth... I mean, I had $5 off in the Renegade booth, so it was worth $20
Yeah, so that's like 65% now.
65%,
right. You're right. Absolutely.
No wonder he likes it.
Yeah, he loves it. He's going to get the dang thing tattooed.
And to round out the night for more special puzzling, one of the new releases that I think it was an Essen release that was brought over by Mayfair was Baron Park. Mm-hmm. And that one has special puzzling more like the patchwork style or Tetrising. And so you're building... Wow, Daryl's really riveted.
I am, because I've seen and heard so much about that damn game, and I know nothing about it.
Can you spell it for the listeners? Because, at least for me, your pronunciation, I'm not sure how that game is spelled.
It's actually Barn Park, I guess it would be, because it's B-R-E-N-P-A-R-K. However you spell the A with an umlaut over the top of it.
It's Baron Park.
Baron Park.
It's Baron Park.
There we go.
What, you don't have this over here? It's a very popular park.
It is.
In Austria.
So what's interesting... So
I would go there and lift stumps out of the ground, and that's how I got so big.
So what's
and
interesting...
the teeter totters, I would lift the toddlers on the teeter totters.
All right, this is way off the rails.
And we're still on Thursday.
We're still on Thursday. Well, we're at least talking about
good
games.
To pick this up and move it to Saturday. Come on, let's go.
Back to the Saturday.
We lift it on the back and let's go.
I apologize to our Austrian listeners. Brad's offensive accent that he's
not an accent, it's Arnold. I'm here.
Also apologize to the Californian listeners.
Yes, the Californian listeners.
Right. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so Barn Park, Baron Park, however you say it. It's interesting that Mayfair kept the name because it's Bear Park. But anyway, it's basically you start with these different little tiles, and when you pick, you draft. Depending on how you build on top of the tiles, you'll cover up little action spaces. And they'll allow you to take different portions from sections of the park. And they get bigger and bigger in points, but they also get more complex and harder to place, depending on what you cover up on your particular tile. And you'll eventually build four tiles out, either in a straight line or a square or in a crook or different ways. And they're all bear enclosures. Excuse me, there's walkways and things like that, too, that are simple or, like, literally, like, bathrooms that are one square. And when you kind of box in an area, you'll get a little bear statue you can put in there. You'll score, depending on, like, goals that are out. One could be, like, trying to get at least three koala enclosures, which was in our game. So, again, it's trying to spatially place these things in place. It's super smooth, really easy to play. I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it quite as much as Honshu. That's not necessarily because I won Honshu, but I'm just better at Honshu.
Just generally speaking.
Just generally speaking.
I'm a pro.
I'm a Honshu pro.
And the Bear Park, not so much.
But Baron Park is really easy to play. Like, once you... It takes you literally 5 minutes to get into it, and you understand it, and you play through it, and I think it's great.
I played it the next night, but, yeah. I mean, let's talk about it now. Because you played it on Thursday, I really liked how simple it was. It's just like you get some, and then you can get some. Just by placing your tiles in a specific way, you can get more in your reserve.
Right.
So you have some options, and I thought that would be weird, but like it just feels really good after you played like just a few rounds. Man, yeah, it's solid.
So I recommend it if you like bears.
Also, some of the goals. For other game designers too, the goals in that game are weird.
Some weird,
we had one where you had to place a tile that covered up two different enclosures in your park and completed them both at the same time.
Oh yeah.
And you would get the tile. And I was like, what?
Yeah. And that's cool.
No, but it's I've never seen that. It's like I expect set collection, like, oh, get three pandas, right. You get that, or get three koalas.
So wait, like your
koalas aren't bears though, but
and neither are pandas. Yeah. So I'm having a very big problem with this game.
No, it tells you up in the front that it doesn't. The koalas aren't bears, but they're cute.
But does it?
Oh well,
at
least
pandas?
It mentions.
Yeah,
that
it mentions.
It does. Okay. It
Well, that excuses it.
Right. Well, most of the things
Barely.
Also.
Happy Father's Day, everybody! Dad jokes.
So, one thing that is interesting about the goals, though, too, is the fact that they mix and match between the games, and they do give you something to do besides just set collection. Yeah. And they're all cool, but they also they go down in order, so there multiple people can claim the goals. But once you do, you take the tile, and you're going to score more points than somebody who does it later. So a little bit of a race there too.
Yep.
Anywho, that's enough for Thursday.
Well, I'll just give a quick update. At the end of Thursday, I've gone 450 miles on my Origins journey.
Oh, well.
Your arms must be tired.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is like a movie where we're like, we're all having fun, and playing games, and doing jokes, and just Eric. To Eric in the car.
Smash cut. I want to give a quick shout out to the Twitch channel Crit Camp. They were doing a live broadcast Thursday night, so I did the audio only mode for that so that I could hear them play. They were breaking open something. Zombicide Black Plague, I think. Which wow. is hilarious to listen to people play. Compared to being alone in a car.
Well, that works.
I'll give you that.
Well, we're going to do Friday. So let's move on to Friday.
I spent 5 hours in the car. You'll hear from me later.
Friday was a big unpub day for me. The booth was pretty much running itself. And so I was going to break out some games. I brought some games to get on the table to play on Friday and Saturday in the unpub area. And Friday all day was Take the Bait day. So I busted Take the Bait out of Mothballs and got it on the table and was able to play it 2.5 times. Yeah.
I didn't get to play that. 2.5?
No, you did not.
I'm that's one of the games I'm actually upset I didn't get to play. But then I remembered, wait, I'm going to see Eric. Jesus Christ.
It's been a long Origins.
I'm still worried about Eric. well, I'm going to see Chris in like a couple weeks. So I was like, he'll bring it up.
Yeah. So we can play it. What was cool and what was also a little bit weird was the fact that Eric Leith, who was in the playtest with you guys in 2012, 5 years ago,
didn't remember it.
What?
Didn't remember it?
No. He was absolutely came by because he wanted to play it and see what changes there were, which was awesome. So he was able to sit down and he watched a portion of the first one. Then we went and had lunch together, and then we came back and sat down and played another game, and he played in that one. So I was able to get a feedback, like, you know, for 5 years ago, and he remembers it vividly. You know, there was a in that particular game, or in the previous game, but also in the game that we played, someone went to TC's technology route and tried to buy a whole bunch of tech. It was Joe Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And he tried to, like, maximize his money and all of his equipment, and in the end ended up beating us, but only by, like, a slight margin, but only by, like, 2 or 3 points. But it proved that it was a viable option, because the first time he weighed in for poundage, it was only 3 pounds, compared to, like, I had 21 on the first day. And he had 3. And so by the end, he ramped up with all that technology and was able to get pretty far ahead.
So it's only a little broken.
Yeah, only a little broken with the technology that he came up. The only thing that I'd added that I wanted to test out is the possibility of the changing game states with little micro events that happen daily. And it was fun. It was just interesting to see kind of those different changes. But it also enabled Joe to visit the market a couple times to get more money, and that allowed him to buy more technology. So
yeah,
we'll have to keep testing that, see if it works. It was fun anyway, just to be able to get a design on the table that hadn't been there for a while.
Can you still get the
bikini? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. In the first game, actually, they all managed to catch different pieces and trade, so all of them had complete sets. So that was pretty cool. Okay. Yeah, and there's also an event where Kathy Sue Loudermilk is looking for her lost bikini. So she's offering a reward if somebody has a piece of her bikini. She's not telling you why, but she's offering a reward. Mm-hmm. And you can get $2 if you have a piece of her bikini. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's Take the Bait. That's what I did during the day on Friday, playtesting stuff in the unpub room.
Yeah, well, I mean, weren't most of us in the unpub room?
Yes.
At least for a while.
we were in the unpub room. I did some tournaments and I lost miserably. So we're not going to talk about those.
Oh, you mean Magic the Gathering tournaments?
Yeah.
And I mean, I had fun.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we held the room
super
down.
Fun.
Yeah.
Super fun.
So I did two of those over the those were both on Friday. So
So I showed up a little after lunch. Came down. It was sort of my slot to run the booth, but everything was going so smoothly. I got kicked out of the operating part and went and played a game. I remember the name of the designer is Keenan, and the game is about space. I believe the game was called Astroventure, but don't hold me to
yes.
that.
Yeah, Kellen Freeman.
Kellen
Freeman.
Game Astroventure, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. We were testing some two-player setup stuff. He's been trying to figure that out. He had been using a die to determine some balance for... There's sort of bonuses if you're the only one to take an action selection type thing, and in a two-player that gets a little wonky. So we talked through that, and I hope I provided some useful feedback, and it'll be interesting to see how that game goes forward. Anybody else get to play that?
He's been working on that for a while, and I've seen it in a couple different iterations, and it's come a long way. So, actually, Christopher Bedell playtested with him last Origins with some. He was working on it out in the open playtesting area near Pikachu's butt, which we didn't have this year.
Well, we did.
It was just a smaller butt. It was a smaller butt.
We controlled Pikachu's butt this year.
Yes.
I mean, let's not...
We control the horizontal.
Let's laud Pikachu's butt for losing weight, not criticize it.
It's true.
Yeah.
You can fit it in the palm of your hand. It's tiny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a little bit creepy, apparently.
After that, we made our way toward dinner. I don't remember where we ate. Probably through like a mare again.
Yes. That was the big group. That was the night with Mallory.
Oh, Mallory.
Oh, yes. Sweet Mallory.
That was the night we almost got stabbed in.
There were 17 of us. 17 of us. A bartender was serving us all the... And
she'd been on...
Bless her heart.
She'd been on since 10 a.m. that morning.
Yeah. She told us some good Minnesota jokes. Don't you know? Some good Minnesota jokes.
So, yeah.
Very important. What? Brad won a Miller Lite church key.
I did. I won a Miller Lite church key for being the only one to admit that I regularly drink Miller Lite. Yeah.
So it's like a win-lose pride.
You want to look at it that way.
Speaking of a win-lose pride,
it feels more like banana to me. It's not win, it's not lose.
It's just banana.
Well, I got bananaed with the pale ale that nobody had ordered. So
that's right.
He gave that to me for free, and I drank it despite my protestations on my own palate.
Uh-huh.
But it was free beer, and hey, you don't turn down free beer. So,
that's right. But you evidently complain about it later.
It's what TC calls American fine. You remember when we were staying there?
For listeners, TC is staring blankly.
He's doing his best Eric
impression. We were in Stack City yesterday. We were inside being blessed enough to about to eat giant hamburgers, and I was sitting there complaining that it was really hot in the lobby, and he goes, I'm fine. I'm fine. And TC, that's called American fine. So you're just totally fine, but it's enough you can complain about it.
Yeah.
I think TC's just nodding to get this conversation to continue.
We're going to have to put out a chart with the timeline for this episode.
No, just jump to Saturday. No, we got to go backwards now. Don't worry, we're in Friday still.
We're all Friday.
Because me and Brad played a game too.
That's right, at the Unpub.
Yep, so we played Building a Better Monster.
Yeah, I don't remember who the designer was.
Yeah, I don't either, but...
Frank Enstein?
Yay! Doctor.
But
Frank Enstein.
But of course I was mad. Of course I was mad and needed to make sure I scouted this game because it was taking my father's work in a Frankenstein game and it couldn't be better than mine. So we played it and it's like a dice rolling game where you are creating a monster.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So you are just specifically creating a monster by grabbing tiles, putting them in front of you and using those tiles and flipping them over to lock in the monster piece once it's created, right?
Right. The interesting thing is that when it's not your turn, anyone else that's playing, they all have a community pool of dice that they use as the villagers to try to get you to stop your work. So they're trying to roll, what was it, four of a kind? Either pitchforks, torches, or electric switches to try to get you to stop working. So it's this sort of... Every time the mad scientist rolls, the villagers roll, and they're trying to build their pool, and you're trying to build your pool, and they stop when you stop, or you have to stop when they succeed. So it's kind of this neat little thing where you're always doing something.
At least you're always involved, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're actively, like, changing the dice or anything.
Right. But it's like, very simple.
Yeah, But as far as... We just gave some feedback, because we played it, and we felt like it was, like, a 30-minute game, and it took, like, an hour.
Yeah.
So it was, like...
It was about twice as long as it needed to be for what it was. But.
So, I mean, once it gets it so going faster and a little more exciting, totally fine.
Yep.
Yeah. So, debatably not as good as my college work.
Would it be fair to say it's a different genre entirely?
I disagree. I think you should... Compare all games to each other, and mine's better.
Based only on theme, then.
Right.
Yeah, all theme games.
Right.
All right, hey,
oh, look, yeah, Friday. But didn't we all come back? We came back night to the Umpub Room.
We did.
Which is the official Umpub Room now.
The official Umpub Room.
Which is great, because that gave us more than just a kind of vague place to tell people to come to.
Yes. Yeah, it was room like, number.
You have a room.
Yep, absolutely.
And breadcrumb trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
at that point, yeah.
And this was Friday night, and Friday, Umpub from at least like noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon until pretty close to midnight was just packed.
Yep. It was a good
Well, there was a break in there for speed dating.
Well, speed dating.
That's
run by Renegade.
People lingered after speed dating because they knew, because of Twitter and everything, they were flipping the thing to open gaming, and it was off to Heezy.
Which was necessary because the actual open gaming section was anemic.
It was like 8 tables.
Yeah, it was unfortunate.
Yeah,
it's funny. Every single time I saw people complaining on Twitter, like, this is the open gaming section at Origins, 10 tables, I replied back, we have 28 in the Origins room. Come check us out and see what's 71. Right.
And by Saturday night, it was it like midnight. It
caught on. We're back to Saturday again.
It's like a Tarantino podcast.
That's right.
Yeah.
We just want to get to Saturday.
We'll start at the end and go backwards. I was going to say, I did get to play King Domino.
Yes,
you did. Well, I also played the other one that we talked about, Baron Park.
Oh, Baron Park, yes.
Baron Park. Yeah. But I got to play King Domino. And I like King Domino. I don't love King Domino. I'm still rooting for Cathala to win just because he's Cathala and I think he's awesome. But at the same time, I don't think this game is a Spiel des Jahres winner. However, it is simple. I had fun playing it, but it is very much... I more enjoyed the fact that we were trash-talking as hard as possible while playing this domino game than I did the actual play of the game.
Well, fair enough. Saw... I'm jumping out of Sunday... Quickly.
Jeez.
Today at dinner...
This is driving Eric crazy.
And today at dinner, we saw the Blue Orange group, and they were carrying a large King Domino box.
A giant King Domino, yeah.
We have no idea what is inside that, but I wonder if that's what the spiel's for.
I'm guessing giant King Domino. No, that is not what the spiel's for. Spiel is for the tiny $20 King Domino, which is perfect for Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah,
right. Has anybody played Magic Maze?
No. We didn't. You know what's surprising? Magic Maze was so super hot for a while. Yeah. I saw it everywhere, and
absolutely,
I could not find a copy
at Origins. I looked,
and I guess maybe it hasn't come over.
I don't remember.
Yeah. It hasn't fully come over yet, and I bet by Gen Con we'll see it like everywhere.
Is that the probably one that you got to go through the Egyptian tomb with the mask on?
This is the one where cooperatively you're moving and building towards some goal. I don't even know. People explain it to me in weird ways, but you're building towards a goal collectively and cooperatively, real time playing this game.
Okay.
And apparently, it's got a little bit of all kinds of different scenarios you can play, and it feels cool.
It is hot in here. Let's move back to Saturday.
By which you mean Friday?
Friday.
Oh, jeez.
So,
what did we play?
We played Master of Orion.
We did indeed, and it was a game.
With who did we play with?
We played with Dan and Kopech. Dan Halstead and Kopech.
Yeah. Dan Halstead.
Nonsensical Dan, as I like to call him. Mm-hmm.
Pretty Dan.
Handsome Dan.
Handsome Dan.
Yeah.
That's a matter of personal preference.
Anyone that doesn't call him handsome is wrong. That's all. I don't
Very well then. All right.
So, Master Orion, based on the early 90s.
Yeah, well, it kind of trickled into the 2000s as well. But yeah, but the height of popularity was the 90s. And it was Master of Orion 2 is one of the best games ever made, to be honest with you, PC games. I loved it. It's a 4X game. You can set up planets and go out and explore and everything else and go to war with different people. So it's one of those beloved franchises where if somebody gets a license, you're like, yes, this is cool. And it was touted as a 4X card game. It didn't have a couple X's. I don't know.
I mean, it had an
exploitation.
It had an exploitation action.
Right.
It had a research action.
Right, but it was not an X. But so anyway, there was a tech tree thing that was happening with the game itself.
It was, it very much had the first play experience of a Words on Cards game, where you just have no idea what you're doing, because...
And you don't realize how much the economy of the game is either, like where hammers are super valuable, and, well, it's for production or whatever the production symbol is. We call them hammers. Getting hammered. So it was just one of those things. Like, Kopac had a ton of hammers, and we were all hammer poor. So it was hard to do things sometimes. But that said, it definitely is, like, when we talk about the Pertel scale, which we have talked about on previous on the podcast, but anyway, it's the scale of how many times it would take the game versus its complexity. This is probably a 3, because I feel like I'd want to play it again knowing what I know now, having kind of fumbled and Forrest Gumped my way through the first game. The second game I would know, but maybe by the third game I would have the rhythm down. The problem is that I don't know necessarily that I would want to play a third game at this point, which is unfortunate because I had high hopes for the game. And it's not that I didn't not have fun, but I had most of the fun that I had was playing it with you guys, because we can have fun doing anything.
Pretty much.
We extended what was supposed to be an hour-long game into like 2 hours because we were being stupid. But it does probably run a little longer than the box suggests, especially on the first play, because you're contemplating a lot of cards that you don't know what they do yet. And you know what? It's fair to say that you probably should play it again, because, again, if you play a game like that, you're going to have to explore it more than once.
Absolutely.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to try it again. Again, though, I'm very trepidatious and wondering if my second play is going to help me to enjoy it more, or if I'm just going to say, well, I understand the game better, but it still feels the same to me. So that's how I felt. I don't know if you felt the same.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Will you keep us updated?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'll play it with Dan Patrice when I get home, and I know he wants to play it, and we do a lot of Forex kind of gaming, and he likes that type of gaming, so I'll try it out, and we'll see. And next to us, what were you doing, Daryl? You were teaching Fate.
I was teaching Fate on Friday night.
You were, to Gilhova.
Yeah, that was Friday night. Yeah, I taught the game to Gilhova, Aaron... I forget Aaron's last name.
Wilson.
Thank you. Yes.
Aaron Wilson. I forget his last name, too.
and then two people, I had no idea who they were. And it was their second time playing, because you taught them the first game.
I did, yes.
So they wanted to play again as two-player, but Aaron came over wanting to play, and then I was going to sit down and play as the fourth player, and Gil came over and said, "Oh, what are you guys playing?" We're like, "Fan of the Elder Gods." "Well, that's not my type of game. Sit down and play, Gil."
"Okay."
So Gil sat down and played. So I was able to teach that, and... yeah, so that happened. I mean, it was nice to have people wanting to play Fate of the Elder Gods. I mean, got great table presence, if I haven't mentioned this before. but yeah, so they played it.
Girls biased.
All right, here we go. So this is totally not Gil's type of game. And at the end, he liked it, which was surprising. He said, "I wouldn't buy this, but I would definitely play it again."
He respected the game so, for what it was and still played through it. But when I came back, like before we were going to play Master of Orion, I told you, like, you know, kind of set it up, and I saw Gil had sat down at your place.
Yep.
And when I came back from using the bathroom, I said, "Oh, what?
Yeah.
Gil's playing this?" Because I was like,
Andy,
oh, man.
Gil was exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, you could see it. So he's working the floor all day.
It was like 11 o'clock at night. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was bad.
But, yeah.
But he trudged through it, had an epic end, and won.
An amazing ending.
And won.
Yeah. And won it.
So, yeah, thanks to Gil for sitting down and actually suffering through that, but also awesome that we were able to get Fate of the Elder Gods out on the table.
And then after that, I packed up and kicked everyone out of the pub room. Yeah. This began the night of 2 a.m.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. The next day was more umpub.
Which, by the way, we've ribbed you a lot in the podcast for, like, staying up till the sun comes up and then going to bed and not coming to the convention till 2 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon the next day.
Not once.
Kudos to you, sir. You went to bed.
He did it.
Me.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
He did it.
It was so proud of you. I was like, he's all professional and whatnot.
My face is growing up.
He's grown stuff.
It was crazy.
There was no, "Where's Chris?" "Oh, he's still sleeping." "Where's Chris?" "Right there." Like,
he's
right there.
He's manning his booth, and he's playtesting this game.
Yeah,
and the bottle of Jameson was over on the side, and I was like, "Oh, it's still relatively reasonable."
Really,
yeah, you know, I had one
glass of Jameson.
Yeah, pretty much a night. Yeah, it was like a glass of red wine.
You owned it. You made it your friend.
Your best friend.
Well, thank you.
I tried to.
I enjoyed this con because I didn't push it, and I was able to hang out with everybody. And
the reason why I bring this up, so Friday night, I kick everyone out at 2 a.m. Brad and I make our way back to the room. Boom, go out for the night. And then I wake up
really late Saturday. Like, we had alarms set for 8, and I think I woke up at 9. And I was like, oh, crap, Brad, we gotta, you know, get going.
Yeah.
So, rushed out, and this is Saturday, so the Pride Parade's going on.
Right.
So, by the time we got out of the room, it was 10:30. The Pride Parade started at 8:30?
Or something.
I think. So, it was like 2 hours into the Pride Parade. And so, we're crossing the Sky Bridge from the hotel into the convention center, and I took a photo of it. You still cannot see the end of the parade. Yeah, it was amazing. It was like a sea of people, and I was like, I sent it to Les. I'm like, this parade is insane.
Yeah. Technicolor marching of joy down the street. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, so, but the reason why I brought that up is because I rolled into the Umpub room late, and Chris is already there playing a game, and I'm like, damn it, Chris beat me.
And not only that, I'd already stopped by the booth and checked.
Damn it.
Yeah, well, thank God for John Moeller, because he was up at like 6:30 every morning.
And to defend that, to make him seem not as heroic as that sounds, he gets up at 5 a.m. for his job.
Right.
So that's like his body alarm late, is up.
So either way, he was covering our butts. So
he was always the first to bed. So. Yeah.
Except Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. You weren't feeling well, though.
No, I was fine. I just wanted to go to sleep.
Oh.
It's like, you know what? I'm having fun. I'm going to go out on a high note. I'm going to bed.
That's a mental condition.
Yeah, apparently.
So, Chris, what did you playtest on Saturday morning before
you all got there? I started playtesting Homebrewers, which we had played at the Mayor on Tuesday night, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm. Boring.
Boring.
Already talked about it.
Wonder Woman's probably better. Inside joke is awesome on podcast.
Homebrewers, I wanted to get it on the table, and because we have signed it, and I want to make sure that it's the best it can be. We still have some tweaks and some things. It's not quite there, but it's humming enough that people are having fun with it. We want to make sure that we're trying to make it flavorful, just like a good brew, so to speak. Uh-huh. So I played it twice early that day. Got two really good playtests in, one of which that I played in as well, and got good feedback. Sat down with Ben later that afternoon, and we went through several iterations of notes that we can tweak and add to it. Some that are very simple that we can add before we start adding in a couple more complex things. Mm-hmm. And it's good. It's going really well.
While you were talking with Ben, I sat down with Eric from... Eric Buscemi to play Lab Notes, Commander Lab Notes. So the new build, I haven't sussed out the two-player rules, so I sat down. He's been playing the blind playtest copy that was like three versions ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he was excited to see where it was. So I was like, I think this is going to work for two-player. And we sat down and worked on it, or played through it. And at the end, he was okay with it. He liked a lot of elements that were in the earlier build more, and I noted those. Because I also agreed with him, especially in that two-player game, how it was highlighted. And you played it already earlier in the week. We just didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had your notes already in my mind. And so I'm sitting here thinking about it. And with Compounded Lab Notes being a roll and write, I've actually been able to hold on to every version build that I've done. Because it's so easy, because it's such a small rebuild. So TC saw me sitting there troubled by myself and said, well, let me play. And TC sat down with Steve and Cole, and we played Lab Notes. And TC pretty much said exactly what Eric Buscemi said. And so I was like, okay, cool. I did my typical thing of over-fixing an issue and then just going way beyond that. I was trying to force something into the game that felt forced. So I'm going to roll back, rebuild, come back again.
Yeah.
I'm in no rush.
Roll back.
And we gave the best feedback, by the way.
You did. I mean, it's between you and Eric. You guys did.
Yeah. We were great. Just fun to say that.
Yeah, you're good.
On the podcast. Just so that it was there.
Just so you have it all on record.
Yeah.
And you should follow every single suggestion we made.
While you guys were doing that, I was playtesting my prototype that I'm going to just talk about for a minute.
Sure. Yeah.
It's called Valor City Vigilantes.
What?
I know. It is a superhero game in which you are competing against each other to become the superest superhero of Valor City. You're rolling dice. You're beating up bad guys. And I got a lot of positive feedback. 5 out of the 6 people that played it said they wanted to buy a copy on the spot.
5 out of 6 dentists approved.
5 out of... The other one was obsessed with not chewing dentine. It was... He was really weird.
he was chewing all the like, bamboo or something.
Like, yeah, it was... Just like, don't chew it. It's not good for you. But no, it was I got some good feedback saying that, you know, they want it now. So, you know, not to toot my own horn, but...
It's a good game.
Yeah, I really like it. Yeah, Chris and Bladell play tested it last year.
Yeah.
And it was it's changed a little bit since then. Not too much, but yeah, it's coming along great.
I like that
game. And we were talking a bit about what could actually make the game affordable.
Oh yeah, it's like just
heat transfer.
Oh yeah, heat transfer on the dice, which yeah because the there's a lot of custom dice in the game. And big quantities of them. Yeah. Not too big quantities, but I mean, right. Quite a few.
You could do screen printing, but we found that, you know, obviously overuse of screen printing will knock it off the dice. But now they have a new process. Well, not new, but it's becoming more dice effective and common.
Which is Dino Island is going to use heat transfer.
Exactly. Yeah. And it looks sharp. It's cool looking. It doesn't wear off very easily. You don't have to have custom molds for it. It's a way to make those complicated dice games more cost effective.
What were you playing Saturday while we were doing all of that?
I was playing... I don't know what order I played these in, but I played Escape from Nemo's Island by Ed Wedig. I don't know... Pronunciation... I got Ed. That was the easy part.
No, hey, you're Ed. Good job. Everybody's Ed. All right, he hasn't had a stroke, so he's all right.
It's a pseudo-cooperative card game in the style of, I sat down and I was like, why would I play this instead of Forbidden Island and Forbidden Desert? Because once you see a grid of cards on an island and you got to collect a bunch of stuff before you can leave.
Yeah, it's a comparison.
Easy to make. So the grid starts with everything face down except the Nautilus and the volcano. And you have to find fuel, water, and food to fuel up the Nautilus in order to escape Nemo's Island.
That sounds cool, actually.
It's interesting. It was just the two of us, so there were some two-player balance issues because a 6x6 grid with 3 actions a turn is pretty big to explore, find everything, deal with the fact that Nemo put 13 traps in that 36 cards.
That sounds cool.
So the trap mechanic is actually interesting. So the traps have a value from 1 to 6. And if you flip a trap card, you get knocked down, you lose an action. And the number of exposed trap cards plus the number on the trap card that you flipped is compared against a value. And if you hit that value, then the volcano starts erupting, and that triggers end game. Unless, of course, you manage to get everything you need and get off the island before you do that. The competitive part of the game comes from every time you expose a location, you get a clue card. Those clue cards can direct you to treasure. Those treasure are worth points. So in addition to getting points for contributing food, fuel, and water to the supplies, you get points for treasure that you might find. If everybody survives, the player with the most points.
Sure.
I played another game right after that. I don't know if other people got stuff in at the same time, but I played the Search for Gaia from Open Door Games.
Okay.
It's a 4X. I got absolutely hosed. So I did not enjoy the game. In all honesty, I was last player. And I had a race where all of the political stuff, I was too icky, so no one would do any of the political parts of the game with my race, and so I got double hosed. And then because of the way the actions went out, because of last player, I got triple hosed. So I was able to provide some feedback on ways to improve the particular race that I was playing so that sort of worst case scenario of having all the bad things happen would be mitigated. So it went from, I was sort of a bio, or a mech race, sort of, work like but not really in any way, shape, or form except the machines, and went from being able to produce, normally in the game you can only produce your fighting part of the 4X, your ships in your home planet, and my race had the ability to create one ship at every planet that has been colonized. But it's not just planet, it's upgraded planet. So in order, you have to find a planet, upgrade the planet, and then you get that bonus. And so we talked about changing that to be the carrier type of fighter allows you to pump out there, so they're like mobile factories, and see if that makes an improvement for that race, allows them to be a little bit more aggressive.
Was that playable in under 4 hours?
Yeah, definitely.
So, all right, hey, I mean, right. That's already
successful. 4X. 4X right under there, 4. Yeah. Well, there's two little...
I thought that was a bird.
Now we got that.
We're about to have a thunderstorm in about 5 minutes.
Nice. Oh,
sweet.
All right, so Sunday.
Here we are.
Really quickly, I do want to mention really quickly two little things. First of all, I wish we'd gotten a chance to play Summit. Connor from Inside Up Games, they had a Kickstarter for Summit. About when was?
But
this?
they were doing a gazillion playtests. Yeah, so oh, like, yeah. I don't think it was.
They weren't hurting.
I don't think they're sad that we didn't get to play.
I just wish I had gotten to play because they had constantly. They were constantly playing the game and they were drawing a crowd and everybody's having a good time playing the game and it was like it's only so many hours. And it looks cool, and I like companies like that and people like Connor who are pushing. Like, they come out, and they're not just pushing the game and trying to push it on people, but actually being excited to play the game, put it in front of people, and get feedback.
Yeah, no, I still want to play it, and I'm going to look into getting that game because it looks amazing. It looks really cool. Art-wise, it's gorgeous. So, and you can play it both either cooperative or competitively, which is intriguing that... The game will have that just by flipping the game board. Yeah. So.
And in the true unpub spirit, Brad played a game.
Well, oh, I was on my phone. What happened?
you played a game on Saturday.
You played a game. No, very early. You played a game by a 6-year-old.
Oh, I did. Yeah. Yes. No, that was
Don
awesome.
Don Lyle's son.
But it was great. It was this cute little game that was, like I just said, made by a 6-year-old, and it's pretty much exactly what you would imagine. It's you got like a line of battleships, pirate ships, mm-hmm. and your own line of pirate ships, and you got treasure on each side, and you just fight each other and roll 2d6s to find out who wins. And you have to, when you fight, you have to make boom sounds. Right, yeah. And when you try to steal treasure, you have to put the treasure on the little boat and sail it all the way back without the treasure falling off.
Which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah,
stacking
it's cute.
And moving.
It's
is,
cute. Yeah, cool. It's very cute. It's, like we said, developed by a 6-year-old. So it's not...
did a dexterity game.
It has an element of dexterity. Right. Sure, because it's a 6-year-old and you want tactile.
A 6-year-old designed a hybrid dexterity... combat of naval combat.
Right. More dexterity than TC's ever designed.
Right, it's true. that's more combat than he's ever designed.
But let's keep going.
6-year-old's better.
But it was really cute. It was really cute. It seemed like in the mold of like a Hobbit type game that you could pick up for just, like $10 or whatever.
Fun thing about Hobbit that I found out today. Mm-hmm. Was that
because
Haba rotates, they have she was telling me 30 to 80 games all the time. And so games constantly get retired. Mm-hmm. And so what they did is, as opposed to what do we do with all these games? They started ripping them open, taking the bits out, and then putting together bit kits and selling them online for $3. And the point was, can you design a game with these bits? And it then became a competition. And so... people have bought the bit kits, made games, submitted them back to Haba. I just found out about this today.
Where's he been?
I don't know where he's been.
Well, hold on. Do you know what's going to happen here? Okay. They've narrowed it down to 5.
The winner gets a trip to Mars.
They narrowed it down to 5, and their Haba's main designer, whose name escapes me, he's coming to Gen Con. They're presenting the 5 to him at Gen Con, and he's going to pick the winner. And he
how they
is
narrowed
help
it down
develop.
To 5? I thought the deadline hasn't even passed.
Well, they're going to narrow it down to 5.
But
he's going to play the 5, and then whichever one wins, he's going to work with whoever designed it to develop the game and make it a Haba game.
Okay.
Which I was like, that is pretty cool.
I've got one in the hotel room.
Yeah.
I ordered a pack from him.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes with giant Mayan dudes and a little demon frog and...
Yeah, I designed the game in my dreams about it, and then I forgot it.
Everybody's pack is different. They're just, like you said, they're random bits that they have, so they want to see if anybody has ideas for, which I think is a good idea, but I also think it's a way for them to sell random bits for $3.
Yeah. Also.
Which is fine. Sure. I'll support Haba for $3.
Win-win for Haba.
Yeah, exactly.
They had a big Haba milk crate at their booth, Yeah, with Ziploc bags, and it's like, fill the bag for $1 of bits. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
How did they brought that?
They didn't put together the
big
kits.
Blue crate.
They had put together 200 pre-made kits, sucks. And they sold out literally in like an hour because it was like announced from Eric on BGG. And immediately it was like, boom, I ordered it, and it was gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool because they decided they'd bring some more crap they can't get rid of in their warehouse and you know, sell it for $1 a piece.
Supposedly the warehouse in Syracuse, like you can go up there and they have a store in the front and the games that they've also retired, it's like buy this game for like $1, $3, yeah. $5. Yeah, like, yeah. So
road trip to Syracuse.
That's right. So moving on because we're pressing on time here. But anyway, we're getting on up to like Saturday night, and that's when we start to get to some interesting games that I played really quickly. Finally played Century Spice Road, so I'll mention that. Is everyone here talking about that?
Yes. Yes,
we haven't played that yet.
Well, Eric has a problem with that.
Oh, really?
Why? No, he doesn't. We compared.
Well, he thought he might have a problem.
Yeah. I was concerned about the fact that as a relatively new company, they may not have done some wise things regarding colors and colorblind friendly. It's a yellow, green, red, brown combination of colors, which is
the worst combination.
Yeah, there, we'll go with that. So, they were fine in the exhibit hall. I'd be curious if we, you know, go somewhere a little darker and a little bit more typical of the bar where I play games, if I'll have any chance of telling the green and the brown apart. But
did you bring it with you?
I did.
The red and the brown.
We have a dark scenario out here. I'm willing to see what that looks like.
I'm out.
No. I mean, I just want to set him up and see if you can tell what's what. That's all.
No, we're forcing you to play. You have no choice. Just take the Sanderland gambit and just get like four cards and just run through them and you'll be fine.
That was all he did. Well, yeah. Here's the thing about our play. So it was me, you, Jason Slingland, Heather Newton, and Owen Will.
Well.
So we had a five-player game, and Century Spice Road is basically, for anybody out there who doesn't know yet, is basically you get cubes, you transform those cubes into other cubes, and use those cubes to fulfill contracts. That is it.
Mm-hmm.
And you draft cards.
It's Euro the game.
Yeah, it's Euro game.
Yeah.
You know, what it is, yeah. So you draft cards, use those cards to either play, and it's all really, well, theoretically it's fast, but it's so fast that sometimes we're like, is it my turn? Because we're like, you know.
So it was a repeat of Friday night, and you needed people to announce their turn was over?
We did. We absolutely did. We were like, is it my turn? So like, when you take your turn, it's like, Brad, go. And then we'd go around the table.
Yeah.
So, but it does go really fast, fast enough that you don't really lose your train of thought unless somebody's really like taking forever or you get lost in conversation. But anyway, you can either draft a card, you can play a card to do whatever's on the card, whether it's converting cubes or getting new cubes into your supply, and or fulfilling a contract. So it's just basically one action that passes, things like that. I enjoyed it. What was interesting to me was that the game, depending on the turn order, will end immediately when somebody takes their fifth card or their fulfilled contract. And so I was pretty far ahead. Mm-hmm. With, and also if you wait, there's two slots as they slide down on the mat where you can take coins, either a gold, which is worth three more points, or a silver, which is worth one more point. And I was waiting almost every time to get those gold ones. So I had like four gold coins and one silver. So I was pretty far up there. Brad was keeping up. And Slingerland, for whatever, I have no idea how he was doing it, but he only had four cards in his hand. I had like 18. And Slingerland had like four cards in his hand, was just doing the same thing every turn. He was just like, I'll play all these, I'll rest, get my cards back, play all these. And he was like,
He came in like third place.
He did.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So I don't know whether that means that particular thing is weird and broken or.
Well, he didn't win.
He didn't win. Yeah. No, you're right. He didn't win. So it was.
That's like what Lonnie says as people come up to him. Oh, this guy's. Broken. Do you want one of them? No, it's just really strong. Well, then
it's not broken. So, I really enjoyed it. Go ahead.
So Century Spice Road was $40 here at Argent.
It was.
And there was a $30 playmat.
Yes.
It seemed like pretty much everybody bought with it. Now, as far as I could tell, it's one of the super nice sort of mouse pad style playmats.
It's gorgeous except for the smell. But yeah.
Right.
You gotta release the spirits of the fish first.
The fish spirits of the spice road.
Yeah. It is not good. But
you think that this game has $70 worth of replay value for you?
No.
Absolutely not. But I got a $10 discount, so.
Yeah, I got it for $60.
$60 worth of replay value for
Probably not, but you know what? This is what cons are all about.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I do think that the playmat adds a lot to the game.
It does. You don't need it.
You don't need it.
As a $40 game, there's plenty of
it. As a $40 game, absolutely. Game,
it should have came with the board.
Well, I won't disagree with you on that. I will not. I think that it probably should, because it's really on cubes and cards.
And terracized cards, which honestly... All the information on the TerraSize card could fit on a mini Euro.
Well, but it's not...
And not change
you're
size.
Not really paying all that much more for the TerraSize cards, especially there's not no, that no. ton of them.
I got
game,
it, but that's so, what's yeah. increasing the box size.
I get it. It's fine. And you're right. It's like... But it's here's fine. The thing. You price out at $40 for all that stuff, yeah. but you're pricing it in such a way that you're going to eventually pay $25 online. Again, it's the economy. It's uh-huh. the way we have to overprice things. As a $25 game... Boom! Yeah, done. Now I bought it at a con for $60.
Oh, $10 off and all this stuff. The new game of the con.
Yeah, and it's the as reviewers and podcasters, and I like to try to get out there and play the things and review them. I know TC's not going to buy them, so it's like I'm going to.
What do you mean? I bought so much stuff.
Yeah, you did. You did so many things.
It'll be popular because Vassal glows about it. Okay. So, I mean, people are going to be like, oh, okay, it's got to be really
good. It's the cold of the new. It's the cold of the new.
Well, and the other thing that came up a lot as I was hearing about this game was the word Splendor.
Well, a lot of people dig Splendor. I do not. Now, see, the reason why, what fascinated about me about this is that I didn't like Splendor, so I wanted to find out if the comparisons were apt or if I'd like this, you know, comparison.
So you did that by spending $60 as opposed to saying, hey, you have
let
to
let me tell you. Hey. Here's the thing. Here's the thing, Daryl.
As the voice of the listener, I appreciate it.
See? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I do it for the listeners. I do it for Eric. I do it for the listeners out
His
there.
Wallet sacrifices for you.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's I'm willing to put my money on the line to review a game and not just go ask for a handout.
Oh, I was like a handout. But like, you know, the demo tables and stuff.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I think as the head of a major media organization, he can spend that kind of money to help his listeners. Right, exactly. Right.
With all those Patreons and Kickstarters we've done.
You're right.
Zero.
None. Please contact ads at dicehate.com.
Anyway,
okay, sorry.
I'm okay with like spending that and trying to get Lisboa just so we can try to take a look at it, and you know, it's okay. I mean, I spend money at two cons a year. I mean, I might buy one thing at PressCon or something like that, but I spend money at Origins, I spend money at Gen Con. And I do it so I can try to get stuff so we can review.
Money was spent, mistakes were made.
Mistakes are made.
Fun was had.
Can we get back to your impression in regards to Splendor?
Yeah.
It sounds like you're much more likely to put Century Spice Road back on the table than Splendor, but is the comparison at all valid?
I mean, I guess in the fact that you have a little micro-engine you're building and you're transforming things into other things. And
but don't
points,
do you get like 30 cards in front of you like in Splendor?
No.
Like,
you're all in your hand. I mean, you can have them in your discard pile, but you don't have them all you know, splayed out in front of you like in Splendor and you do like bam, 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 bam. Like, I mean, you pick one thing from your hand. It's much easier to play than Splendor.
Yep. Right.
It goes faster than Splendor. In my personal opinion, the fact that it has more camels in it than Splendor is much better. So,
did you count the quantity of camels in Splendor?
Yes. It's about, I would say...
It's like a 3-to-1 ratio.
It's a 3-to-1 ratio. Yeah. Century Spice Road has probably at least 80% more camels than Splendor
does.
Yeah, all absolutely. Right. Splendor's all about the gems. We got spices and camels in Century Spice Road, so obviously it's superior.
The thing about Splendor, if you notice on one of the cards, you know, you get the white gems that, you know, you're in the snowy area, if you look really closely, there's a snowman killing and a snowman has thrown him off the cliff. But there's also a camel in the foreground. It's weird.
I mean, we joke, but there are cards with camels in Splendor.
I realize that. And now, granted, I did not tell you that the Splendor is a bad game. I said, I don't like it.
You would prefer to play Century Spice
Road. I would prefer to play Century Spice Road.
The difference is that Splendor is there's camels depicted in the cards, and you're a jeweler working on all the things. In Century Spice Road, you are the camel gathering the spices and then delivering them.
These are
anthropomorphized camels.
Yeah, right.
None of this is actually depicted in any of the articles.
Right.
It's all implied in the rules.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So one last question for the comparison.
Sure.
Because it was the talk of the con.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I can get my non-gaming parents to play Splendor. Do you think Century Spice Road could hit the table, or is the... Is it it raises the level enough that, that you're happy with it as a pretty hardcore is not the right word, experienced gamer?
Yeah.
But does that maybe detract from the experience as a non-gamer?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, like I said, it's easier to play.
Yeah, I think it'd be easier to teach, easier to play, easier to pick up, easier to replay than Splendor.
I do too. I mean, it's comparably, if you're talking about price-wise and you really love chips, then Splendor's your thing.
Yeah.
But if you love camels and cubes, hey.
Yeah, I agree that Spice Road is all easier, but there's something about Splendor that seems more simple just because of the chips.
Probably.
You know what it is? Probably. What it is, and somebody called us out and I said, yes, that is it, is in Splendor, when you complete one of the gold cards, it gives you something, so you constantly have a red gem. Or you constantly have a black gem.
Right.
Century Spice Road doesn't give you that. It just gives you the points. And you're right back to...
Century Spice Road is slightly less forgiving than Splendor.
Yes.
But it's easier overall to play. You just have to think about how to build your engine more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it has more depth than Splendor. Subtly. Even more so the fact that it's easy to play. But very subtly. Yeah.
The reward is points, not more mechanics to help you get more points faster. And I think that's the downfall that I have for Splendor is it helps those that are winning win more because, oh, look, you got all those victory points. I'm still trying to get my engine going, and you got like 3 or 4 free gems every turn, and it's frustrating.
Sounds like confirmation bias to me.
Does it?
Well, I'll...
Don't you does it, TC?
I'm just...
confirmation bias.
Yeah. Well, I feel like... Yeah, all right,
that's it
for
the state of games.
Forever.
Hopefully I'll get to play it before we all leave Origins, and then maybe I'll record something...
Well, after this podcast, if we ever finish it, we will play Century Spice Road, so you can experience it. We're almost done, so I will really quickly mention that after that, I broke off. Some of you played Honshu again, and I played Throwback Thursday. I played, because we had a podcast not too long ago that talked about, like, things from our youth and other things, and one of those was the game of Bonkers, or this game is Bonkers, and Patrick Hillier had mentioned that he had that. So he brought it, and Patrick and I have been trying to play a game in Origins for 6 years now, probably. He's always brought Nuclear War with him, and we always wanted to play that. And so he had brought This Game is Bonkers, so I sat down and played This Game is Bonkers. From 1978, by the way. I think the last time I probably played it was 81. And that game is bonkers. It is a roll and move where you roll and you try to get around to score places, and you try to score. But every time you stop in a blank space, you have these cards in front of you, and you put one of them on them. So it's like, go ahead 12, or back 6, or go to start, things like that.
So you're
that.
Building the game more or less as you play.
You're building the game as you play, and you start going in these loops where you go back, and this, and you bounce off of different things, you roll around, and you get to find. If you finally end on a score spot, then you score a spot, and then you're racing to 12.
That sounds bonkers.
It is bonkers, and it is horrible.
So while you were doing that, I had a great experience playing T.C. Petty's
My Father's Work. Well, there you go.
And I think that game's been discussed enough on the podcast. I was going to try and tie in some of the experiments on animals into a joke there. But
what did you think about My Father's Work from the designer T.C. Petty the third?
So get beers.
It was a really good experience. I think the best thing I can say about the game, and it's...
Can I pass out and hit my head now?
It's a pretty quick compliment, is that even though we played a 3-hour teaching game, I didn't know it was 3 hours. I didn't feel like it was 3 hours. It felt like we were having a good time playing a game, and it didn't have the con problem of people interrupting us every 10 minutes either. It was just, we played a game for 3 hours, and we all had a great freaking time.
You bring up a good point, though, and I don't mean to detract from talking about TC's excellent My Father's Work, but the fact that we're in the unpub room, most of the people who know that are coming back there, we've already talked to you through the day, so we're actually able to play a game and not get interrupted 1,000 times.
Yep.
I mean, we might joke around and talk amongst, you know, kind of different tables, but we can actually play through a game that doesn't make it feel like it's that long. It doesn't take that long.
Well, while you were playing a 3-hour My Father's Work,
well,
I did a 3-hour demo of Fate of the Elder
Gods. Yes, you did.
And that was because we were constantly interrupted and they were talking.
Okay, it's a counterpoint to my point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was the opposite of that. But those people, it was actually Adam and Mel from Kick Track and their friend Chad. It was still a good game. They still very much enjoyed it. They were not complaining at all about the time because they were having a good time. I was the one keeping track of time because I'm like, I'm really tired. I want to go to bed. And so it was just, I mean, the game went well. I mean, it went very well. They absolutely loved it. But yeah, that was a counterpoint to that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just want to say real quick, like, my father's work, anybody who played it over the weekend, awesome. Like, thank you for stepping up and playing a game. I know it's, I mean, I told everybody it was like 2.5-3 hours of playing. And sometimes, I mean, they all averaged around 3 hours, which is returning to, and I even took out actions. And it's just reminding me that, like, you know, it gave me a huge amount of feedback. Everybody who played it, though, said it was fantastic. They really liked it, and that doesn't really help with feedback, but it's amazing to hear. And I got, and after that, we could get into feedback of, like, I picked apart each, why did you do this, why did you like that, right? Gil played it. He was super, super happy to have played it, because he put it on his list. I didn't know why he put it on his list, but whatever. So Gil played it. I had a great play test with the publisher that I was talking about earlier. And just, yeah, everything that happened over the weekend was awesome. And as people could see from pictures from the event, it's pretty much me just on a computer.
Computer the whole time, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or playing My Father's Work. So I haven't really piped up about anything because My Father's Work was my big thing. And I brought that, and it was the only thing I brought, and that's my focus of being here. And it was awesome, and I love it.
TC yeah. came to our house a couple days before Origins to crash, and he rode out with us to Origins. And so the first 2 days, he was just nose in his laptop typing, like Ethan would want to, hey, TC, look, I'm playing the Switch. He's like, uh-huh, that's cool. And just typing away, like, every now and then. And so that was the thing, but we did play it before we left there, and that was like a 9-hour playtest. But we were, we had two kids, and so constantly interrupted. But so we stopped between generations.
Huge gap between generations.
Or between generations. But at the end of the day, I mean, it didn't feel like a labor to go back to finish the game. It was oh yeah, let's go back and finish that. Like, it was excited to go back and do so. So you're doing something okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And but it was just cool to have everybody play that stuff. Is anybody jumping? I want to flip over to Sunday because it's the last.
Just really quick, I'm just going to mention that I finally got to play Nuclear War with Patrick Hillier.
Ah,
and I know how you feel about that game, TC.
No, that's great. I mean, that's fun.
We had
Artana? Like a great time
from Artana. No, it's from Flying Buffalo.
Oh no, that was tomorrow. That's tomorrow. Was Artana?
Yeah, dude.
No, Nuclear War is from like 1960s, from now published by Flying Buffalo Games.
Oh,
which Flying Buffalo. I don't think they were at Origins this year. First time in forever.
Oh, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah, first time forever they didn't have a booth at Origins, which is really, really odd. So, a classic in my opinion, but also a game out of its element in time. You have to know what you're getting into playing. But we have four players, and we played through it. It finally came down to me and Patrick being the only people left after we had nuked the other two out of existence. And it came down to both of us. He nuked me out of existence. And when you do that, you get a final retaliation, and I nuked him out of existence. So it was mutually assured destruction, which is the greatest ending you can have in nuclear war. So, an awesome game.
Greatest or most expected?
Most expected. Yes, that's probably the best. But it is good. No, the greatest ending you can have in nuclear war is when someone loads the 100 megaton warhead onto anything that can carry it, and you drop it on someone, and you end up rolling the high percentile into the 100 percentile, or you spin and get the high or triple yield. And when you have the triple yield with 100 megaton, you blow up the Earth, and everybody does. That's the best ending for nuclear war.
It's an interesting sounding game. It sounds like the only move is not to play.
Yeah. Some might say that. Mm-hmm. But yes. Anyway, go ahead, TC.
Let's bring us into Sunday because woke up and got stuff from North Market, which pretty much has been every day. Go get stuff from North Market.
That's
eat
nice.
Something at least, which is good. Love it. But then I ran into Kimberly and Matt. And
I played Bonkers with them.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, they played. Okay, yeah. And I'm not going to use last names because last names have changed.
Something
Kimberly
about Revia or something.
Yeah, yeah. So Kimberly and Matt, they grabbed me and were like, "Let's play games." So yeah, she shook me, and so I just
all night
at this
long.
Point I played my game enough, so I was just like, "Okay, cool. Let's actually play games." So we sat down and played one turn of Banana Bandits.
Yes, and you have been going on and on about Banana Bandits for like
about all how night. one turn was all you needed to buy it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that was it.
You what? Were in love. No, yeah, it just been
love.
No, we played it one turn. It was great that turn, and then we moved on, and we went. And then we went, and there was a group of people playing. I finally got to meet Nicole, who is an Australian that has moved to Canada, and who is my denim partner, denim friend.
I Heart Museums?
What?
I Heart Museums?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on Twitter. And her and Portland Tiffany, we all, and two other people who I feel bad, I can't remember exactly who they were, but we all played Fuji Flush, and that was the first time I ever played Fuji Flush.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It was a big group, and so...
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, it was sweet, and I lost, and so I don't like it. I like that you have to work together as it goes around. As it goes around the table, you play. Like, no one ever explains this game. I had no clue what it was before I got to it.
Really?
Yeah, because no one ever explains it. They just oh yeah, Fuji Flush. It's fun. It's just a light party.
That's because you don't listen to the Geek All Stars podcast.
You weren't explaining it
to him.
Oh, right.
Explaining to everybody.
I didn't want a 45-minute explanation. All right, anyway, but in it, the cool part about it is that you can make teams as you're going around the table. So it's like if someone plays a 2, I can play a 2, and then you add those 2 together, and it makes a 4, right? And then if someone else plays a 2, it makes a 6. And the only way that... And if it gets the whole way around the table and everyone would play a 2, it would be super nice because everyone would get to bank that card and they wouldn't have to draw a card.
Right.
But if anyone plays a card that's higher than the value of that team or any card that's played before...
That's the awesomeness of it,
yeah. Yeah. That's the awesome part. And no one ever explained that to me. But that's cool because you make these temporary teams and you're rooting for it and then you slam the table and then it doesn't work out, you grab another card, right? Super fun. I liked it. It's really light, though.
It is.
Yeah, I don't really know if there's any strategy to it.
It's a bar game.
I don't know. But super fun. And that's it. I had my bubble team. I got my Jenny's ice cream that day.
I had my giant Bavarian pretzel and got my Jenny's ice cream, finally, from North Market. So it was a good day.
The only thing I've yet to get from North Market is my chicken and waffles.
Well, that's tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning, we're going to get it.
When is the ice cream place open?
It's
up before the room. Like that, yeah. Well, we're going to be going like 10, so it'll be fine.
It'll be open.
The only thing that I did was help out with the booth all day today, and I ran a couple of demos of Brewcrafters, which was a lot of fun. I got to watch, teach, and watch.
I saw you doing it.
Yeah, did you?
Yep.
Well, there you go.
I was trying to say, hey, and everyone was just trying to teach me Laser Rider.
I already know
Laser Rider is cool.
Well, at least they were doing their job.
The unpub room was pretty light today, so we got to pack up and...
I wouldn't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah, I know. You were out pounding the sand.
Out pounding pavement, pounding backs.
And pounding flesh. No, that's not good.
Fists and hands and shaking babies.
Shaking babies. And so I was going around handing out sponsorship information to previous sponsors and new sponsors, potential new sponsors for UMPA 8.
Prospects.
Tell them about the prospects. Thank you. About the organization, about the convention, what's coming up.
I have a question.
So I got some new things coming up.
Is there a time coming up when we're going to, or UMPA as an organization is going to announce anything?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
It's on the agenda.
It's on the notes that you
I'm
can't
to
see.
Segue, man.
It says UMPA news. No, it's after things that I said we shouldn't go over. So.
It's so hot in here.
I know. I do want to say though, but we did do the UMPA library build.
Mm-hmm.
And so Eric and Brad and I went around, and I just want to thank Daily Magic, Golden Bell Games, Passport Games, Formal Ferret Games, Czech Games Edition, Haba, and Portal Games for their contributions to the UMPA library for Gen Con, and for Dice Hate Me Games, specifically Dice Hate Me Games.
you may have heard of them.
For their contribution to the UMPA network as well. And once again...
Specifically $20.
Yeah.
Right now. Right
now. I may have given on the podcast.
And he is not getting back.
Gas money, son.
That was my Sunday. Then we went to Bear Burger. And now we're here. And now we're caught up.
We are caught up.
Oh, and then Eric passed out.
Remember that time Eric passed out?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We told a joke and he passed out.
So Brad told this joke and Eric passed out.
Yeah.
And then we recorded it.
And then we went and met him.
So Tuesday.
Tuesday. I was going to Wilby.
Yeah.
I was will be playing this. I was going to.
So I think that wraps us up.
That wraps us up for Origin. So there are obviously some more games that I've picked up. I got a traded for a copy of Tash Kalar, which I'm going to try to play before too long. I've got a copy of Lost Expedition. A couple other little titles here and there that are sprinkled in with that. So hopefully I'll get the chance to play those before the next podcast. Let you know how Origins goes. But that pretty much caps up our adventures in Origins. If, again, we cannot iterate this enough, if you are at a convention and you see us and you know us and you see a Dice Hate Me shirt or
run the other way.
Or an
Unpub shirt, exactly. Do not hesitate to come up and say hello. I've listened to the podcast or I know who you are. I just want to say hello. Because we're not too busy to ever say hello. And I really love
TC being, is.
TC is
far too busy.
He might be.
But I'll have a sign up.
He will. He'll put up one that says, do not disturb. But for most of us, we will want to get FaceTime. One of the best things about conventions are the fact that we can... And I met so many people at Origins again. So many, it's very gracious. People coming up saying, you know, we love your work. We love what you're doing. Daryl's got a story about that, which is funny. But anyway, we won't tell it. But yes, please... Come up.
And find us and ask us about the story.
Bro, find us and ask about the story, yeah.
And he won't tell it then either.
Most of us will be at Gen Con. And so if you, we'll have more about Gen Con as it's coming up. But again, if we're there and you see us come up, please say hello. We'll have more about that as we get further into it. But for now, let's move on to the backside of the podcast. Notable Kickstarter is the only thing I'm going to say right now is Pocket Ops, which was being demoed at the Grand Gamers Guild booth at Origins, their first booth, which they were selling Unreal Estate and Stroop and giving those things to Kickstarter backers. Is Pocket Ops now currently on Kickstarter and going back? It's about $12,000 right now. It's a lot of people were demoing. They had a lot of response. They actually jumped quite a bit from their demos at Origins. So go and check that out on Kickstarter right now. Anything else from anybody?
I'll just throw out that between Kickstarter backers picking up and sales at the con, they sold out of Unreal Estate.
Yep, absolutely. Which, good for them. I mean, Unreal Estate's a cool game. It's got gorgeous art from Corinne and possibly some of the best graphic design in the industry. if I do say so myself.
Oh, that's so weird.
That's weird.
Famous. Homebathic design. Air quotes.
Anyway. And I will just reiterate that I backed Halloween. So. Dice Haven Games news. You've heard enough about us from the podcast. We will be delivering Spirit Island and Laser Riders very soon. It'll be in retail probably by late July. We'll have a big launch of that and Fate at Gen Con. And, of course, hopefully, Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So. Few Javas are in retail. We had tons of them at the booth. We sold a lot. Go and check out in retail for your friendly local game store. If they do not have it, tell them to ask their distributor to get it in and order you a copy. Other than that, Unpub News.
Yeah, Unpub Midwest tickets are on sale now. So go to unpub.net and you can see the big banner there for Unpub Midwest tickets and click that and there's your tickets. Also, Unpub was at Origins if you haven't listened to this podcast at all. Thank you to Renegade Games for sponsoring Unpub and getting us the space, which turned out to be, according to Twitter and our followers, one of the most popular things in Origins this year. So, once again, thanks to Scott and Sarah and everybody else at Renegade
for that
sponsorship. also, a big thanks to Chris Rollins, who made these amazing playtest journals that all the designers got when they came and playtested games. Or show their games at the Unpub area.
TC's got one in his pocket right now.
It's fantastic. So
yeah, this is in my hand. My father's work. And it says they're 1,000 XP as his company.
Okay, 1,000 XP. We will be working with Chris in the future, and possibly those might make a reappearance. So we're going to be talking with Chris.
Pikachu's butt.
And also, keep your eyes peeled to unpub.net as of July 8th. As we will have some huge news coming down the pipeline.
Huge news?
Huge news.
You did not say news.
No, you did not.
Huge
news. I'm sorry. Big announcement.
Yeah. They're like 2400 DPI. They're like huge.
We have some very big announcements concerning Unpubby, as well as some future plans for Unpub.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, scroll back up there so I can see. I do want to say that the Unpub 8 dates have officially been declared, and they are March 23rd through the 25th of 2018. We will be back in Baltimore, Maryland. So, but again, keep an eye on the website, July 8th. Mark your calendars. It will be a day that will be remembered for a day.
And then you've got an Unpub Mini in Westchester, Pennsylvania on the 24th. You've got Unpub present at both BGG Con and PAX Unplugged the weekend before Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah, man. Eric is spilling it all, man. You go. Go.
And, the rest we'll learn about on the 8th.
Yeah, and there may be another con that's popping up because of our presence here at Origins, but again, we'll announce that on the website as well as on this podcast when we have more information.
It's RuthCon.
RuthCon. Ruth has sponsored us. Eric's going to be there repping Unpub for us.
I've got the shirts now.
There you go.
That's right.
You got it. Moving on to TC news.
Oh, is there TC? Oh, yeah. God. Every single time I say Spires, it's coming right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
And it totally is. It's like another week or so. Just like keep
the faith.
Yeah, just keep going up to your mailbox and opening it and then closing it and then getting sad until the day it comes, and then you'll be filled with joy.
Yes.
When it comes. So
you will. So that's it for this episode of State of Games. We'll be back next time with even more great board game discussion. We love hearing from all of you, so if you have any topics or new segments you'd like to hear about, we can add them to the show. You can email those ideas to thestateofgames@gmail.com or tweet them @thestateofgames. You can also go to dicehaven.com and comment on the podcast, or JoanGuild1903 on BoardGameGeek.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter @DiceHateMe, as well as Instagram. If you're not following me on Instagram, you should be, because I'm really cool on there. And also
I have the best pictures.
I have the best pictures ever.
He has like 500
photos of food and stuff. Food it's stuff. Great.
I know it. You know it. Everybody knows it. No, I really like Instagram. I think it's a great community. Everybody's super positive on there. So it's a lot of fun. And I've enjoyed following and seeing what everybody else is up to. So anyway, what about the rest of you?
You can find me on Twitter @GetLouder. And you can follow Unpub on Twitter @TheUnpub, as well as on Instagram
@TheUnpub. What? It's like the same handle for both places.
That's crazy.
Hi, I'm TC. I also do, as opposed from here and also Twitter, I also do the Perfect Information Podcast. I do a segment called Deep Design, which is going to hopefully be a little bit more frequent than what I've been doing, but at least once a month, so you'll see me. Check that out.
And I am @RELDNAHCIRE, that's @RELDNASIRE, on any social media platform you can think of, because who in their right mind would use that handle?
Right. That is Eric Handler backwards, by the way.
No spaces, no capitals, none of that. And maybe you'll find me on an upcoming episode of the Screen Issues podcast.
I hope so.
Oh. One of these days.
What is that?
What is that?
It's got to come back from the dead. It's a comic book thing.
That's true.
Hello there. This is Arnold. There's a statue of me outside of the convention center in Columbus for some reason. You should put the picture of it in the show notes. You can find me at Brad Smoley, which is a really weird place if you're trying to find Arnold Schwarzenegger. But maybe I'll check it. He gave me the password.
Okay.
That's all.
That's all. That's all. That's it.
Okay. We're really punchy. It's Sunday.
And it's hot.
We've had beers.
Until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
This is Get Louder.
This is Puppy Shotgun.
This is @RealDesire.
This is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Saying thanks for listening. And
may all your rolls be sixes.
Hey, that was like a barbershop quartet.
One-word impression?
Logan.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart. Logan.
That's not
Logan. Yeah.